Welcome to BogsCast. Where faculty and staff at the Boggs Center on Developmental Disabilities explore best practice, showcase success stories, and help listeners envision possibilities for innovation through interviews with state and national experts. Part of Rutgers Robert Wood Johnson Medical School, the Boggs Center is New Jersey's University Center for Excellence in Developmental Disabilities and Leadership Education and Neurodevelopmental Disabilities Program. I'm Melissa Cheplik, Senior Training and Consultation Specialist at the Boggs Center. In this episode, we will be discussing mental health practices for people with intellectual or developmental disabilities, and our guest is Jean Farr. Jean currently serves as the CEO of the National Association of Dual Diagnosis, or NAD. Jean has been a leader in management positions in disability and mental health for over 30 years, received multiple awards honoring her exceptional professional contributions. Welcome, Jean. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you very much, Melissa. I'm honored to be here.
So let's take it from the top and tell our listeners a little bit about NAD. Who is NAD? What is NAD? And tell us a little bit about the work that you do with the organization.
Well, NAD is an association for persons with intellectual disabilities and mental health needs. NAD was founded over 40 years ago by Dr. Robert Fletcher because there were sort of no practitioners, no educators, just people in the field of treatment did not know how to address the individual needs of people with intellectual disabilities who also happen to have mental health challenges. So because of that sort of lack of availability, Dr. Fletcher founded NAD, and fast forward, we are an organization comprised of individuals, families, direct support professionals, researchers, psychologists, psychiatrists, really anybody who cares about, in one way or another, people with this dual diagnosis. We have become known as the international expert in the dual diagnosis sort of field of study. We've been training and consulting for these last 40 years. We've published over 75 books, one of which has you, Melissa Cheplik, as an author. And we also publish a professional research journal.
Well, certainly, Jean, we know that you and I have a long relationship working together in different activities at NADD. I love how you mention psychiatrists, psychologists, direct support professionals, other leaders in the field. We've really come to know NAD as our professional home, right? All of us with this goal of supporting a quality of life for people who have mental health needs in addition to developmental disabilities. Sometimes we hear the term dual diagnosis to refer to someone with a disability who also has mental health needs. Sometimes we see that written or referred to as IDDMH or IDDMI. So maybe you can talk us a little bit through about what is meant by a dual diagnosis. And what that means when we hear that term, dual diagnosis.
You know, when we use that term, we are referring just very plainly to somebody with an intellectual disability who also has a mental health disorder. And let me tell you kind of what I mean about mental health disorder. So from time to time, we all experience stressful events in our lives, things that knock us off our balance, that cause anxiety and lots of stress in our lives. And that's, you know, kind of normal, right? Everybody has those moments in life. But when those issues, which are largely externally driven, when they end up lasting longer than 3 months, the severity of the impact of that stress or anxiety impacts one's day-to-day functioning, you know, for an extended period of time, then we're looking at more than just a temporary mental health challenge. Then we're looking at something more serious that can be diagnosed as a mental illness. Essentially, a dual diagnosis means the coexistence of two disabilities, an intellectual or developmental disability and a mental illness. Both IDD, intellectual and developmental disability, and mental illness must be assessed and diagnosed by someone trained to understand how to assess and diagnose people with intellectual disabilities. Because, you know, just like all of us, when we suffer stress or anxiety or mental illness, we all have different ways of showing that, different symptoms. So for people with intellectual disability, it can be kind of tricky.
So, you know, it's only within the past 40 years or so that professionals and the field of disability has really recognized that it is possible for people to have that those co-occurring needs as you're describing. And we know that at least one third, if not more, people who do experience intellectual and developmental disability also have really significant behavioral health and mental health conditions that require mental health services. But because, you know, it's been only a few decades that professionals are kind of recognizing these needs, our system, that our services, they're not necessarily set up to meet people's needs in both of these areas. So a lot of the work that we have done together, Jean, is to really look at tools that support what we call, you know, best practice in dual diagnosis, best practice in mental health for people who have the experience of disability. So as our listeners are striving to achieve best practice in dual diagnosis, can you talk a little bit about what that means? What is best practice? What do quality treatment and supports look like in dual diagnosis?
I think first and foremost, when looking at developing services for people, we need to make sure that we are thinking about looking at all aspects of a person. We need to make sure that that whole person care is a value that is woven throughout treatment. We need to assume trauma. By the time someone gets to the point in their lives where they're receiving services, they have undoubtedly experienced trauma in one way or another. So rather than trauma being an occasional consideration, I think we're growing to understand that we need to look at people through the lens of just assuming that there's been trauma. Also, assume the best, assume competence, assume the best in people. Honor their ability to learn, ability to grow and develop, support them in looking at his, her, or their inner life, their needs, their strengths, their motivation. I mean, best practices really is driven by looking at the person in their full, wonderful, messy complexity. So that's kind of like conceptually how best practices are embodied. You know, we're big proponents of credentialing. We have a credential which supports the very thing that I'm talking about.
So part of the work that we do together is on that credentialing for direct support professionals. So in association with the National Association of State DD Directors, NASDs, right? And they help sponsor through NAD this certification in dual diagnosis to really provide recognition to those programs and professionals that were really offering that quality of care and demonstrating those best practice concepts that you identified. So tell me a little bit about the different types of credentialing and certification that is available through NADD, both for provider organizations and also individual practitioners.
We have both programmatic accreditation and professional certification within our credentialing. So in terms of our accreditation, that is a formal process through which NAD reviews kind of the intent, structure, functioning of a program or a group of programs for alignment with a set of competency areas. So there are 18 different competency areas within the accreditation set of standards. And they cover everything from medication-related topics, of course, to biopsychosocial approach, basic health care, interdisciplinary teamwork, quality assurance. Just a whole host of quality standards that ensure the adherence to dual diagnosis best practices. And the accreditation program involves interviews with staff, with people receiving services, with a records review, policy review, and also ongoing consultation. So the NAD accreditation is driven by kind of a mentorship model. Once the organization becomes accredited by NAD, the organization is sort of forever linked to the organization and can always call upon us for ongoing consultation, you know, as they need, pretty much in any arena around dual diagnosis. Our professional certification is something that people often do hand in hand with accreditation, or organizations choose to just focus on certification. So we have three separate but interrelated competency-based certifications: the DSP, specialists, which are like administrators, and clinical certifications.
So when a program or an organization has that NAD accreditation, it's essentially telling the community, it's telling its service recipients that this is an organization that is that has been certified in dual diagnosis by NAD to exhibit that best practice. And you mentioned the specific professional certifications for practitioners as well. What are the competencies? What are the qualities? What are the benefits to service recipients when they have a practitioner, professional, you know, working with them who has this NAD dual diagnosis certification?
Well, let me focus my answer on the direct support professional certification, if I may. The others are in alignment with this, but this gives some specific detail that I'd like to share. So the benefits to the person receiving professional certification include that they have been provided the education and have learned applicable skills to better meet the needs of people with a dual diagnosis. For the professional, they also have recognition within the larger community that they're trained in dual diagnosis best practice competencies and that they've gone through the process and achieved full certification. Another benefit to people receiving the certification is that it's portable. So once certified, if you should leave an organization you're working at, the credential is portable. And people that are certified become part of an extended community of practitioners. The benefits to the community, Melissa mentioned a few things, but we're fostering a workforce with a demonstrated level of really important expertise. We're promoting and advancing knowledge in the field of IDD and mental health by establishing competencies to ensure the highest standards of care. The certified individuals increase the effectiveness of supports, diagnosis, treatment. Certified professionals really enhance the field.
So I appreciate the emphasis, like the highlight on the direct support professional, because we know that outcomes for people are, you know, largely dependent on the competency and the skill of the direct support professional. And I think it's helpful for us to really think about the direct support professional as that person who's in a position to recognize mental health needs and recognize mental health symptoms. So let's talk a little bit about how can a DSP be more prepared to meet people's needs, and then also how this credential can help them just do their job better.
So in terms of how DSPs can be better able to meet the needs of people with complex behaviors, I think that we're kind of talking about aspects of NAD certification, because the learning that happens through this course of study is grounded in a code of ethics established by the National Alliance of Direct Support Professionals. And it really focuses fundamentally on person-centered supports, promoting the physical and emotional well-being of folks, integrity, justice, respect, relationships, you know, all the things that we know are critical. So when DSPs are able to operate from that framework and then learn comprehensively about how to assess people with this dual diagnosis, you know, what kind of behavior supports to develop, how to address crisis, not only in terms of prevention during a crisis, but also after a crisis, how to really work towards health and wellness, how to develop the skills to know how to collaborate within the larger community so that services are being framed and developed in unison with others. Those strategies, those sort of areas of learning are incredibly important, and they're made more potent by the fact that in each of the learning categories or competency areas, the acknowledgement of diverse backgrounds is integrated into the work, person-centered language, guidelines, you know, from different national state agency guidelines, and elements of critical thinking and communication. Those are embedded into the learning. So I think that learning those different areas of competence and exploring oneself in the way you can only do when you're studying, you know, just learning about oneself and one's ability and how to apply the knowledge to the work, it all kind of works together to improve one's ability to work effectively with people that are complicated.
So a direct support professional might work with people with complex needs in a community setting, like a group home, or helping them find jobs, or supporting people with health appointments. A direct support professional might also be someone who helps care for someone and support someone, you know, in their own family. So if a direct support professional is interested in this NAD certification, right, and they can demonstrate the skills and the benchmarks, the competency areas, what makes them eligible to become certified? Tell me more about that process to become certified.
A DSP wanting to go through the certification process needs to have completed 1,000 hours of work with individuals with IDD or mental health challenges, paid or unpaid. So it could be volunteer work. And they must have worked at least one full calendar year. There's also the question of, are they in good standing in the organization? You know, are they in compliance with all of the requirements? Have they completed their required trainings? And we need to make sure that they're not under any kind of disciplinary review process. Then we require a letter of recommendation from a current supervisor and also one from a person supported or the representative of somebody receiving services. So those are the prerequisites, Melissa.
So once a DSP is eligible for the application process and they meet all those prerequisites, then, you know, we really encourage, right, for a DSP to get support from their provider, agency, or their employer, just to really help them be prepared for the actual certification process. And that's an exam, right? It's an online exam that is administered to DSPs to evaluate their competency.
Yes, it's an online exam, and applicants will be provided with scenarios that involve working with individuals with a dual diagnosis. They'll be asked some questions that will demonstrate their skills and knowledge and values involving their work. And they need to, you know, as they're answering the questions, they need to demonstrate competency in the required areas. And we really encourage people to prepare. They can familiarize themselves with the details, the competencies on our website, but also we have a learning management system that people can take advantage of, where they can go through and learn about the competencies that way.
So we really encourage direct support professionals to seek out this certification and to kind of have that NAD seal of approval that they do have this elevated level of skill and competency, especially to meet the needs of people with complex needs, behavioral health needs, and mental health needs, and in addition to developmental or intellectual disability. So one area that NAD focuses on is, you know, workforce development through that certification and training. But another area of focus for NADD is intersystems collaboration, really promoting those partnerships across settings and, you know, across service systems. Do you have some guidelines or methods that you recommend to really promote those partnerships and collaboration to make sure that people's needs to disability and their needs related to mental health are being met?
Yes, I think that I mentioned it before, but involving every single representative of a person's life, every part of their life, school, friends, work, the key people in their life, involving them in the development of services, and for organizations to collaborate with others in advocating for increased integration of services, right? I mean, so many states have siloed systems. And when people from different parts of organizations can come together, can call together folks representing different organizations and look at different aspects of services and how to kind of work together to better meet the needs of people with challenges, I think that's something that we're seeing more and more and more across the country, that successfully meeting the needs of people with this dual diagnosis is very challenging in that the systems are not designed to very easily knit together. The mental health systems, you know, we're kind of designed for one group, the developmental disability systems for another group. In some areas around the country, there's active activities, active projects, initiatives to knit together those sort of siloed organizations to be better able to support people with complex needs. So participating in committees and ongoing organizations and in joining the various committees that NAD has. We have all sorts of committees. We have conferences. There are many ways to get involved with NAD and many ways to link up with other organizations just through NAD. NAD can be a conduit for people wanting to just learn how to collaborate with perhaps organizations within their own community they don't sort of immediately know how to access.
NAD has really been a partner, a champion, like bringing people to the table from different service systems and sectors and professionals to really see that cross-section of helping get people's needs met in that really person-centered way. So for our listeners who are hoping to be better at meeting the mental health needs of people with disabilities, who are hoping to build capacity in dual diagnosis, what is one thing you hope our listeners take away from our conversation?
I think for me, as somebody who is a family member and a former DSP, and as someone who's just been involved in pretty much most aspects of this world, I think the most important thing is to remember how similar we all are. How, I don't know about you, but I don't know anybody who hasn't had mental health challenges from time to time. And just to remember not to disregard any part of a person because of a label, but to instead just look at everyone through the lens of embracing their complexity, not underestimating their ability, and just seeing them to the degree you possibly can for who they are.
Thank you so much, Jean. And Nat has provided such great examples of that through the work that you do and really preparing, you know, a workforce and improving systems to be responsive to people's needs. Is there anything else you would like people to know about NAD or any exciting projects coming up with NADD that you want our listeners to know about?
Yes, I'd love to tell you about the Link Center, which is a national project of great significance, funded by the Administration for Community Living and led by NASDES, the National Association of State Directors of DD Services, and in close partnership with NAD and also the National Association of State Mental Health Program Directors and a host of other partners. But the Link Center is a resource that is comprised of many critical elements that will help the larger community better learn about the needs of people with a dual diagnosis, but better address the needs of people with a dual diagnosis. One of the most beautiful and amazing things about the Link Center is that it is led by a 12-person steering committee, 100% comprised of people with living experience. So the steering committee is a key part of our ongoing collective learning within the country, because everything that's being developed is being led by and informed by this important group of leaders. Within the Link Center, there's a website where we've got great resources being posted on the website more and more all the time. There's a policy academy that is generated out of this project that is looking at states and helping states sort of look at how they deal with crisis and the 988 systems. There are really wonderful shared learning groups that happen every quarter. It's a great growing resource that I think will have amazing impact over time.
So that's great. We will share the information for folks to learn more about that project. Also, for more information about NAD and ways to become involved with NAD and certification and accreditation, you can visit the NAD website, www.thenadnadd.org. So thank you so much, Jean, for making time to have this important conversation. We look forward to continuing our work together to meet the mental health needs of people with disabilities, both in this great state of New Jersey and beyond. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And thank you for our very, very long and wonderful partnership with the Boggs Center and with you, Melissa. Thank you.
All the best to you, Jean. Thanks. Thank you for listening to this episode of BoggsCast, a podcast by the Boggs Center on Developmental Disabilities. A full transcript of this episode can be found at theboggscenter.podbean.com. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite streaming service to stay up to date with the newest episodes. To learn more about the Boggs Center, visit our website at theboggscenter.rwjms.rutgers.edu and follow us on Facebook at the Boggs Center on Developmental Disabilities.